Okay, just interviewing Brian Robinson on 20 July 1973 at Dwingalo. Well, now I have talked to Frank Kerr about how he got into radio astronomy, so I do know some of the early years of CSIRO, but were you around from right after the war also?
No, I came at a later stage. I reached CSIRO in 1953.
I see.
Whereas radio astronomy there had got going in 1947.
Right.
And so I was 6 years after the...
And your previous experience was what?
I came straight from university as a mathematics and physics graduate.
And you got interested in astronomy or just thought it would be, looked interesting, I mean?
I think I came into radio astronomy because of Teffy Bowen, because we had a fairly good graduation class. And Taffy Bowen picked out the four best people in that graduation class before they graduated.
I see. He was recruiting, really.
And invited them in to, for an interview.
I see.
And got them. So I wasn't even thinking about a job at that stage. And he basically offered me a job on graduation.
Which school was this?
This was Sydney University.
Yeah. And were there any of the others that went into radio astronomy just out of interest?
No. The three of the four ended up in radio physics, but I was the only one who went into radio astronomy.
Okay, so you got to CSIRO and what did you begin working on?
Well, I arrived at a very good time because the 21 centimeter line had been discovered in Harvard,
right.
Good fight, and also in Sydney,
right.
Only about a year or 18 months before, and a 36 foot dish had just been completed in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And they were building a multi-channel receiver, which was still very much in the building stage.
Until then it had just been a single channel that they swept?
They used a swept frequency arrangement. This was the first multi-channel back in. I think we started off with four or eight channels, quite a small number. And it was a DC comparison system. It took quite a lot of debugging. So I came in about the time that the telescope was completed and the receiver had to be got going. And got stuck into getting that receiver debugged and on the air with Frank Kerr and Jim Heineman. Then of course we had the biggest dish in there was a bigger dish at that time than the Dutch had, because the telescope here was only completed in 1956. So this was 3 years before Twinlo was completed. So the Dutch were using Würzburg.
Right.
And we had a 36 foot dish with a 1.5 degree beam.
Yeah, that Würzburg is just a couple hundred yards from here.
Yes. So just at that time we were better equipped than anyone for 21 centimeter work. And the sky was wide open. One of the very first projects we did was to look towards the clouds and Jolly. Immediately the signal started
and that's
pouring in. And that got me interested in basically extragalactic 21 centimeter work rather than galactic work.
Mm.
Frank Kerr went on from that point to do the southern counterpart of the Kufak 21 centimeter survey, and of course stayed in the field of galactic structure. But I got interested in extragalactic 21 centimeter work at that point. Of course, we tried to work with a lot of other external galaxies, but sensitivity was killing us.
just one
at that point. I think this excited my interest in getting better sensitivity.
Now, what did you have for a receiver, actually?
It would have been a crystal mixer.
With a system temperature of roughly
3,000 degrees? I don't know if it was 3,000 degrees, single side band or double side band.
Sort of lose track of that.
Yeah, it was there. It was high. Yeah. Now, my radio astronomy career then got interrupted because I was offered a... I'd done a master's degree at that stage, but I was offered a... The Royal Society in London had set up a scholarship in memory of Rutherford.
Yeah.
And I applied for one of those and got it. And here's a bit of the history that probably shouldn't be recorded. I decided to get Cambridge, England.
You could have gone anywhere in England.
I could have gone anywhere in the British Commonwealth.
Which is pretty wide-ranging.
But there was a very strong tradition in physics graduates in Australia going to the Cavendish.
Right.
This was a tradition that had gone on through the 30s.
Yeah.
And so when I suggested to people I had a scholarship to go somewhere to study physics, Cambridge was whatever suggested.
You weren't thinking so much of astronomy as physics.
I was basically thinking of physics.
Yeah.
I hadn't determined that I was going to be an astronomer all my life. I was trying my hand at astronomy.
Yeah.
I thought of myself basically as a physicist. I arrived in Cambridge about the time that the 2C survey was nearing its completion.
And this was about what year, can you think?
This was 54. So I only spent a year with radio physics at that time. I'm 21 centimeter work. And around about the 2C time, relations between the Cambridge group and the Australian group were pretty poor.
Right. Strained, to say the least.
Strained. And they got even more strained as time went on, because Bernie Mills had got the Mills Cross going and did his sample of 0 to plus 20 declination and could only find 1 in 3 of 2C sources.
Right.
And the whole question of confusion suddenly.
This, by the way, is all very well documented in Edge's treatise, as you might imagine.
I'd be interested to read what he said, because I was... I was probably even closer to what was going on than Edge was.
Yeah.
The upshot was that I went to see Martin Ryle for a radio astronomy project. And he suggested a number of projects, none of which struck me as worthwhile. Basically, the group was completely involved in finishing 2C.
Mm-hmm.
And it was too late to join in 2C, and they didn't want an Australian 2C. Anyway, because the aim of 2C was to produce a list of 2,000 sources, and the number that they had was a well kept secret. And if I'd started on 2C, I would have known they had 1,840 sources. They didn't want this information leaked back to CSIRO.
So you sort of agree with the tradition of, or the belief that Cambridge is very secretive unnecessarily for this sort of thing, or?
Oh, yes. I could tell you 50 anecdotes about the degree of secrecy at Cambridge. Basically, in Cambridge, one's left hand doesn't know what one's right hand is.
But why does this come about? I've never understood that, really.
Um, in some ways it's a it's almost a Cambridge tradition.
University
tradition. It's very hard to extract information from people there, but I think it's probably more closely associated with Martin Ryle's own personality, and the people that work with Martin all become very closely identified with him and the group. There's a very high degree of identification there. And part of this identification process involves family secrets. And I didn't know whether you've talked to Rupert Clark, but Rupert was...
No, I haven't.
Rupert was completing his thesis in Cambridge and applied for a job in Sydney, and told Martin that he'd been offered a job in Sydney, and when he graduated he was going to Sydney for the next 3 or 4 months that he was in Cambridge. And he didn't hear one more thing that was going on. So he'd been a member of the group. He was
amazing.
He lost his security clearance.
Yeah.
Immediately. I know most of the radio astronomy groups in the world pretty well. And the Cambridge group is the one group where you can go and visit them, as I did last month. And come away learning virtually nothing.
Even though you talk to everyone.
Even though you know what they're doing before you go there, you know through the grapevine what's going on, but you learn absolutely nothing more. For example, we're interested in a millimeter wave telescope in Australia, and I know the British have got plans for a millimeter wave telescope, and John Shagshaft is on a committee concerned with this. But I spent 2 days with John Shagshaft. I couldn't even get from him as much as I already had. For example, I had in my briefcase the prices of all the quotes from about 12 companies tendered on that telescope. And I had a copy of the tenders in my briefcase, which I got from DSIR. From SWAL, the Radio and Space Research Station, that willingly parted with this information. But I couldn't get 1% of that information. I didn't reveal what I already knew. But secrecy is very hard. Anyway, the upshot was that I was regarded as a suspect person by the by Martin and his close collaborators at the time. And the projects that were offered to me were very, I regarded fairly useless projects. And one of them, I can't even remember what the projects were, but one was a low frequency project which would obviously be plagued by interference. Another one was attempts to measure the magnetic field of the quiet sun. And we've already passed through solar minimum and we're for maximum. as it turned out, two other people did take these projects on and bitterly regretted it. Mm. Robin Conway took on the solar one, and who took on the other one. But they had a rough time.
These were dissertation projects.
These were dissertation projects, PhD dissertation projects. So I ended up working with Radcliffe on his ferric work.
I see. That's interesting, because